Today, at least virtually, my friend Marissa Streit. Marissa is the CEO of PragerU. She's a powerhouse in so many different things. PragerU, if you don't know, is a nonprofit. They're an education entertainment nonprofit company organization. They've had over a billion views a year of their content. And Marissa is also the host this year. She started a podcast, I think when I did officially, Real Talk. She's killing it. Everyone should go over and follow her. Marissa, thanks for joining.
It's a pleasure to be here, my friend.
Yeah, too bad we couldn't do it in person, so you owe me one. But it's better to do it this way than not to do it at all.
Well, I agree. Listen, I live in the belly of the beast in Los Angeles trying to, you know, fight the war of ideas. And any opportunity to come out to Miami, the land of the free, is very much welcome. So you'll see me there soon.
Yeah, this week, the president of Argentina, President Milei, was here, and it kind of gave me the sense, I posted about it, that everything is happening in South Florida these days, right? I grew up here, it was a sleepy town, and now it's like every day there's something else big happening and a lot of good things that are happening in contrast to different places around the world.
Absolutely. Yes.
So I actually want to share with you, I'll start by sharing with you a conversation I had with someone this week, and it really made me think of you, and I was happy that we were having this conversation. It was a filmmaker who's making a movie that's going to be coming out on Netflix about the atrocities of October 7th. And I was speaking to the filmmaker and asked him why he's doing it as a Netflix series. And he said, well, people don't trust the media anymore. People barely trust documentaries anymore. And most people get their information in entertainment, which is like a total flip, 180 degrees on how, as a society, we're supposed to work, right? Entertainment's supposed to be fiction and the reality we're supposed to get from our news sources and our teachers. What do you think of that guy's position? Is he right?
You know, I'm a big fan of edutainment. I'll tell you that I don't necessarily think it's a new idea. I grew up in a Jewish home. I actually grew up in Israel. And one of the things that we used to do when we learned Hebrew was that we would use our fingers to actually learn the Aleph Bet, the ABCs in Hebrew, with honey. And so we would draw with honey the letters. And the concept behind it was that education should be something sweet and fun and exciting, and not necessarily something that is really only saved for a four-walled classroom or something that is associated with boring. So I think this is another one of those like brilliant Jewish ideas that we have come up with, where, you know, the Jews realize that education is fun. And it should be entertaining. It should be a lifelong journey. And so I think that your friend is actually picking up on an age-old concept that has started, you know, many, many years before our existence.
Incredible. And let's talk a little bit about PragerU and really your reason for existence. If you look at your mission statement, is to create a free alternative to dominant left-wing ideology and culture, media and education. Tell me a little bit about what problem you're trying to solve for.
So we say that education got us into this mess, and education will have to get us out of this mess. That's one of the phrases that we use around here at PragerU. My background, for your listeners who may not know so much about me, I used to be an educator. I taught every grade here in the belly of the beast, K through eighth grade. I actually ran a school. And I had a deep look into America's education system and many of the problems that we are dealing with. And it's not just about the issue of Israel. It's really about the issue of America and, frankly, dumbing down our society, expecting less and less with every generation that passes by. And the politicization of our classrooms, and so many of America's classrooms, and you see this especially with colleges, have become left-wing indoctrination centers. They don't actually focus on reading, writing, and arithmetic. They lower the standards there, where with other initiatives, they continue to push ideologies that are frankly anti-West and anti-Americanism. So 13 years after we started PragerU, my goal is not to say I told you so, but my goal is to say, wake up, America. There is something that needs to be done vis-a-vis the education of our youth, because the minds of our children is everything. And there is a war of ideas on the West. There is a war of ideas on Judeo-Christian values. And these are things that are worth protecting. And so we have to fight against it. So the original idea of PragerU was to teach what isn't taught. We realize that people don't have a lot of patience. People are very, very busy, especially parents, especially college students. I don't know how they're busy, but they're busy. They think they're busy. And so we said, give us 5 minutes of your time and we will teach you the things that you should be learning and you're probably not learning in college or even in high school. And that project evolved, you know, fairly quickly into an expansion beyond the 5 minute video. So the 5 minute videos taught the love of America, the understanding of the West, American civilization, goodness, kindness, you know, finding spirituality, morality, all of these important things that are not being taught in schools. And people approached us and said, wow, I mean, you're reaching millions and millions of people with your videos. Would you consider taking on additional projects because you don't just make content, but you disseminate it so well, right? And so Prairie was kind of unique in that concept that we didn't just make the edutainment. We also built an audience that is starving for better information. And with that growth in that platform, we realized, okay, you know, it's possible that God is asking us to do more than the 5 minute videos. And so we expanded into a full edutainment media platform online. And, you know, we make short documentaries. And 2 years ago, we launched a new project, PragerU Kids, where we make content for littles because we realized that the left-wing indoctrination starts at such an early age. And so now when you go to PragerU.com or if you download the app, if you engage with us on YouTube, you will see that kind of like, you know, like a ministry or like a synagogue, there is space for everyone to get educated. It's kind of like broccoli for your brain.
Broccoli for your brain. I still don't eat broccoli and I'm 43, but I get what you're saying. I just want to break down a little what you said. You talk about your audience. What can you tell us about your audience? What kind of data do you have to show who your audience is? What is your audience made up of?
So PragerU has multiple audiences. There are the people who have subscribed to us for many years, and these are people who are, you know, probably agree with us on a lot of things, though it's impossible to agree with us on everything because we make so much content. We make 40 pieces of content a week. So I don't know if there's anybody in your life, even your wife, probably doesn't agree with you on everything, right?
And most things, yeah.
That's all right. It's good for you. It's medicine for the soul. But I believe that actually hearing ideas that you may not agree with is medicine for your soul. And so, you know, the audience that subscribe, there's an audience that subscribes to us that really trusts our content and understands that in general, we will produce content that, you know, will enrich them ideologically and mentally and give them the intellectual ammunition to respond to some of the issues of the day in our society. The next group of our audience are new people, people who are, I say are running for the hills. They're looking around and they're saying, oh my gosh, has America lost its mind? What is happening with the West? Why are Americans supporting things like Hamas? Why are Americans against having a border wall? Why would we not want to have security, right? And so they watch our videos on social media and they come to PragerU to hear an alternative perspective. They probably don't agree with much of what we have to say. And in many cases, we are the first time that they're hearing a well-articulated argument on something they've never heard before. And I would say that's probably one of the most interesting audiences that we're engaging with because there are millions of them who have never heard this perspective and what an opportunity it is to wake them up. And then the third audience that we have are the haters. And I'm fine with them too. They're totally welcome. And so since we launched PragerU in schools in particular, you know, places like the Boston Globe and NPR and Vanity Fair and Mother Jones and all of them have been very upset about the fact that we are reaching families and children with ideas that were not allowed to have been taught in schools, right? And so they have writing many articles and hit pieces on us. And their audiences are now coming to PragerU to figure out what is this PragerU, not a real university place. And it's fantastic and hilarious at the same time because these audiences are coming to us and actually discovering that we're really not so bad. And, you know, if I may say so, many of them are falling in love with us. They say, hey, you know, I don't agree with everything you have to say, but it's the first time I've come to PragerU to hate on you, but for some bizarre reason, I've fallen in love.
Yeah, but it's not a bizarre reason. I think what differentiates PragerU's content from other content that you see online is that it's substantive, and people are hungry for substance. They want to hear the arguments. They don't want to be told what to think. They want to think for themselves. And yes, PragerU has a point of view, and there's conclusions that people agree with and people don't agree with. But before you get to the conclusion, you all do in general a really nice job in laying it out and laying out the facts that support what you're doing. And I really think that's what differentiates in this podcast, which we just started a few months ago in January. There's always haters, especially when we deal with anything Jewish or Israel. We get the anti-Semites in the comment section, and I love it. I'm happy they're there, because if they're there, they at least listen to a few seconds of it. Let them hear for a few seconds a position they disagree with, and you know, we'll see where that takes us. But that's what free speech is about, right? Hearing speech that you don't agree with and maybe making you think a little bit about. I'd love to break down a little bit this issue of education, which I know is at the heart of what you do. Let's separate for a second college education, which has its own host of issues, its own source of their own issues. The sources are different as to why they have their issues today, as to who's funding them, etc. And also, maybe the level of tolerance should be different when we're talking about young adults in college, where you want to hear some crazy ideas. Sometimes there's a good argument to be made that you got to hear crazy ideas and debate them. That's what college is about, or what it should be about. But talking about K-12, that's what I really want to focus on first. Tell us a little bit about what's happening, broadly speaking, in our country, because when this is something that's very polarizing in our media. When you turn on Fox News or Newsmax or any right-wing media or right-leaning media, you'll hear this is the biggest problem in our country today. Any Republican elected official is talking about it. I agree, it's one of these biggest problems that we have. One of the biggest problems that we have. It's also one of the hardest to solve because of how the school districts are set up by state, and in every state it's totally different, and what the federal role is, if anything, in what our schools are doing, K-12, sort of they set up these guardrails, but they don't really dictate what the schools teach, which is probably a good thing, but that makes it a more difficult problem. But then if you turn the channel to any more left-leaning media, or you go to any Democrat event almost, and I'm involved in politics like you know, their narrative is a very bizarre narrative. Generally speaking, the narrative on the left, like you know, is this is made up. This is not really happening in schools. They don't. That's it. It's this weird fantasy argument, as opposed to saying no. They don't defend those type of educational institutions or approaches. They just say it doesn't happen. So what's really happening, Marissa?
I mean, the word gaslighting obviously comes to mind, but I think that, you know, nobody can deny the fact that the left has dominated, especially government schools or public education. And we know that simply because of the pure evidence that the teachers' unions have so much power, and the teachers' unions do not hide their left-wing ideology. And one of the things that I love to show people, and, you know, people can look it up, or, you know, you go to my Instagram page, I post this all the time. The 2022 agenda that was produced by the NEA, the National Educators Assembly, which is association, which is one of the largest teachers unions in America. It has over 2 million members, right? Teacher members in there. They outline their agenda. And do you know, Gabe, do you know what the number one issue of business in their agenda, in the NEA's agenda, was from 2022? Their number one issue of business. Israel and the Palestinian cause. And so here we are living in the United States of America with students who can't pass a literacy exam, you know, who can't, we're number, I think, 31 in the world on math, right? We, in places like, I live in California, places like California, government schools receive about $24,000 per child in kindergarten, and we can't seem to educate them. And why is that? Well, because you have these political behemoths that are really pressuring the schools to focus on political ideology, including ideologies that have very little to do with American education. And so, you know, the number one issue of Israel of business was Israel and the Palestinian cause, but there were three additional issues of business in there about Israel and Palestine. And then there's the LGBTQA plus cause and the, you know, critical race theory causes. And so the schools are actually not serving Americans with reading, writing, and arithmetic, or the things that need to have served. They're serving them with politics. There's absolute proof that these schools are infiltrated with left-wing agendas. So if somebody says to you, it's simply not true, you have actual tangible proof that it is true. And then you can go, you know, just go down funnel and take a look at what is the stuff that you will find in a classroom. Go to Scholastic, just, you know, audience, go to scholastic.com and look at the books that receive awards by, you know, book publishers that make supplementary content for schools. Look at the awarded books and what their focus is on. It's not focused on E Pluribus Unum from anyone. We're all Americans. Let's be patriotic. Let's, you know, save our country. Let's work on perseverance and character development. No, it's about LGBTQ issues. There was a book that received an award a couple of years ago called Melissa. This is for fourth and fifth graders. Scholastic gave them an award. And what is this book about? Is it about a child that was born George and now identifies as a girl, Melissa, and has basically transitioned? Is that not political? Is that not evidence that we are being gaslit? And so this well, I guess they will say, this is not political. This is just social justice, right? No, it's not social justice. It's political. They just play a word game with us, which we need to stop failing at. And that is the key point. Parents need to stop getting duped by the word games that the left has been playing on us because the price is too high.
Yeah, what's interesting is if you speak to, and I'm sure you do, well-meaning people that are not very political but live in cities like New York City, I have friends that live in Manhattan, kids go to public school, and we have these discussions about these things happening in their schools, this lessons on gender ideology. And to be clear, when you're saying they have the Israel's their number one issue, it's anti-Israel for those people who are wondering. It's part of the left-wing ideology where they paint Israel as a colonial, white colonialist, you know, fits into the CRT way of looking at the world. But when you speak to some of these people, these parents in cities like New York City, well-meaning, you know, they've bought into that narrative of justice, social justice, like even if they don't agree with it, but they think it's the nice thing to do. And then there's a price to pay later in their lives when their kids are raised in a certain way. And that's really, I think, the danger of sort of the naming. Yeah, the left is very good at naming their movements, right? They don't just say we're brainwashing your kids with socialist ideas. They call it social justice and all these beautiful flowery words. And that's really where they catch people. It's very important. But let me ask you a question, Marissa. What role does school choice play in being an antidote to this? I know we're seeing in Tennessee, there's a big vote this week or next week on school choice. Florida has been leading the country on school choice. Can you tell us a little bit about your viewpoint on school choice?
You know, my viewpoint is even beyond school choice. You know, obviously school choice and vouchers and all the new ways where people can actually choose a school that is best for their own kids. And, you know, with our taxpaying dollars, we should be able to send our kids to non-left-wing seminaries if we can find them around us. But really my goal here, especially with PragerU, is to wake parents up. As an educator, I'll tell you, Gabe, I remember that I was told to tell parents that they should effectively forfeit the education of their children to the schools, that parents should bathe their kids, they should feed their kids, they should make sure that their kids go to sleep on time, and that the school will do a great job doing the education of everything, including the values, not just reading, writing, arithmetic, but the values and social emotional stuff. And I want parents to realize that it is not true. The most important people in raising children are the adults around them that love them. It's the family, the parents, the grandparents, if they're around, maybe aunts and uncles. People need to understand that their children need them, and we can't send our kids to an institution that's going to teach them values, because again, we are paying the price for that. And even if you're sending your kids to a parochial school or a religious school, parents need to be involved in the education of their children. Even if they have school choice and they're sending their kids to a private school, parents need to know what is happening in the classrooms, because many teachers will come out of left-wing indoctrination seminaries. These are teacher colleges. And oftentimes, if they are told that they are allowed and should teach values, then that could come at a risk. And we are seeing that even with private schools that we think are wonderful. And so we can't rest on our laurels and think that school choice is the absolute solution to everything. It's certainly better. It's certainly better than taking some power away from the government schools, because it will take power away from the teachers' unions, who are really holding our kids hostages and are really the biggest problems. But it's not an absolute solution. What parents need to do is lean in as much as they can. And that has really been why I'm so passionate about PragerU Kids, is because we try to make these short videos so that families can take them home. And whether you have a kid in kindergarten or you have a kid in sixth grade, you take these short videos and you have these discussions about life, about goodness, about perseverance, morality. And these things do need to be brought home. You know, many years ago, kids were more resilient, better readers, better thinkers, better critical thinkers, that when we spent less money actually on education. And much of it is because these kids had a community that raised them. The parents were involved in the education of their children. If it wasn't the parent, it was a grandparent, or it was the church. When it's the government that's raising your kids, you know it's going to fail you. We're seeing that in almost every single thing that is run by the government. So, you know, school choice is great, but what is even greater are parents getting involved in at least teaching values to their kids. And yep. Here at PragerU, we're trying to make that a little easier.
For sure. By the way, we hear the sirens in the background. It's on cue for LA early in the morning. There's got to be some call they've got to go to save the world.
Save a homeless person down here.
I think you hit the nail on the head on the most important underlying issue that I think a lot of people miss, and I want to highlight, which is the way I see it. The underlying question is, who controls your children's education? Who is the parent? Is the parent the mother and the father, or is the parent the state? And that's really the question. You're seeing it in California where they're talking about whether if a kid is transitioning, quote unquote, transitioning in school, or wants to go by a different gender, that you can't tell the parents, right? And that's a debate that's happening in Democratic states. And if you listen to the debates, I try to read what the other side is saying. What the other side is trying to say is, well, they're trying to protect these kids because if they go home, their parents are going to be terrible to them. So don't worry, the state's going to take care of them, right? It always comes from this like well-meaning, supposedly at least well-meaning position. We're saying, we'll take care of you, we'll take care of you. But if you think about it for just a second, it's not hard to see through it. That's actually communism. It's not even socialism, right? You're giving over your property, your kids at this time, to the state and for the state to control it. And that's never worked.
Yeah, there's the tug of war is really not between the institutions. The tug of war right now, and families are realizing it, is between the parents and the institutions. It's between the parents and the government. The government wants more power, and finally, parents are waking up and saying, "You should not have power over my children. You will not have power over my children." And I think when you talk about, you know, politicians who are realizing that this is becoming a huge priority for voters and for parents, it is because they have really gone too far. The government has gone too far. The left has gone too far. They have been gobbling and grabbing in every single aspects of our lives. And now they're trying to gobble our children. And that is where you see the mama bears, people like me, who are like, you know, I don't care how hard you're going to try to do this. I'm going to fight tooth and nail to not let that happen. You will not grab my children from me. And there is a real opportunity right now if we come together as parents. I oftentimes think about, you know, just the power of the teachers' unions, because, the two big ones, between the two of them, they have close to 5 million members, right? But there are more parents than teacher unions members, right? And so imagine this, all of us parents coming together and saying, no, no more. You do not have authority over my children. And of course, there are children who reside with families, with crappy families. With crappy parents? Am I allowed to say that? There are
shitty parents. You're allowed to say whatever you want.
There are some shitty parents out there, because humans sometimes are made shitty, right? That is true. But I think that anybody with a rational mind would agree that the vast majority of parents want the best for their children. The vast majority of parents will make a better decision for their children than a huge government entity, the vast majority of them. And so why would we legislate or create programs that is based on a very, very small minority at the expense of what the vast majority of families would need. And that's, you know, they're using these smaller incidences to really gulp additional power that we need to hold the fort down and not be okay with foregoing.
No, and there's also, they're ignoring, sorry to interject, there is already a system in place, right? There are systems in every state in place where the court system, the government, but through the court, through the judiciary, not through the school board, where they can take control of a child and take a child out of a house that's abusive, right? Those systems exist, and they exist for a reason, and we don't hear people complaining about those systems. Of course, they're not perfect, but there's judges, and there's a process, and that's how that is dealt with. But to put that power with the school teacher or with a school principal or with a locally elected school board is, I think, where it really goes overboard.
Completely. I mean, I can give you so many examples, but specifically for listeners who do have children, I think it'd be helpful to know that there are some words that they need to be mindful of when it comes to where they're sending their kids to school. And even if you're sending your kids to a school that you love, you never know what kind of teacher could be in front of your kids. And, you know, things to worry about is like the word critical, you know, critical thinking, critical race theory, critical gender theory. These words have been coerced by left-wing indoctrination centers where they sound good to us, but they're actually not good, right? We know that we've seen critical race theory is a really bad thing. It's dividing America. And so they'll take words that we have an affinity to and they'll manipulate us. Social emotional learning, you know, was intended to, or at least seems like it was intended to be a great thing. I was like, of course, it's a great thing that kids will have better ability to cope with, you know, emotions and interpersonal relationships in the classrooms. But if you look at under social emotional learning programs in many schools now, it has become mental illness fests in classrooms. You'll have a teacher who is basically trained in SEL to conduct a therapy class in front of 20 or 40 other kids. You know, hey, child, raise your hand if you feel like you've experienced trauma recently. What is your traumatic experience? How have your parents dealt with your traumatic experience? Like, why would you have a teacher in a classroom even discussing a child's trauma in front of other children? But a parent thinks, oh, yes, we want SEL in our classrooms. We want them to, you know, grow emotionally. But it has gone so far that it's come to a point where we're shoving mental illnesses down the throats of our children, and we don't know it because we've been manipulated again with this word game. And so for parents who are listening, you know, I hate to say this because I know you have a lot on your plate. Many parents have, you know, more than one job. Most parents have to work, and it's hard. And I get it that it's hard to be involved, but these are times where the attack is directly on our children. And it's oftentimes where our guards are lowered. And it's oftentimes through language manipulation. And as you mentioned, there's a lot of gaslighting. But if you're having an instinct that something is off with your children, you need to pay attention and you need to lean in. And you deserve to have a window into the classroom and know where your most precious children are going to. You need to know what is being fed to them.
Yeah, and like you said, in the private schools, it's also a problem. The difference is then you have a choice to pull them out and go to a different school, and that's where parenting comes in. But I have plenty of examples, even in religious Jewish schools, that are problematic. But as engaged parents, we find out immediately our kids know how to deal with it themselves, the older ones, and we get involved immediately. And I think that's the balance. It actually doesn't even upset me. I think that's the balance. Teachers try things. It doesn't work. The parents go speak. A school that works will figure that out, mediate for a solution, and keep moving forward. What I'm concerned about also, for a second, excuse me, is we have to take, in my perspective, we have to take values teaching, quote unquote, values teaching out of K through 12 education. What we can't do is overcorrect and be oppositional on the right and say, okay, you're teaching this, so let's, where we can win, let's teach the exact opposite. Because if we overcorrect and try to teach values that, let's say, you or I think are the right values, you're going to be excluding a big group of kids. And plus, we've proven, we as a society, the global we, the greater we, have proven that we can't. We don't do a good job teaching values K through 12. We don't. We should get back to the basics, to math, to science, to civics, which is a big issue. Supposedly now it's a right-wing thing to teach civics, which is incredible to me. We live in this country. We should learn about this country, right? But that's, I think, where we need to focus. We have to be careful not to overcorrect. I'm not sure what you think on that.
You know, I don't think it's about overcorrecting. I think at the bottom line, it's about teaching truth and logic, right? And so what the left will do is they'll push things so far out that even if you say that, you know, math should be taught, they'll say, oh, no, math is racist. It's unfair because not everybody can do math, right? And so now suddenly math has become a political thing. And so if you want to create benchmarks for math, or if you want to have a merit-based award system, now you're overcorrecting. You're being a right-wing extremist. And that's what they do. They'll label you. And we're so afraid of coming, you know, conservatives have generally been so afraid of being labeled as right-wing extremists. We want to say, oh, no, we're, you know, we're reasonable. We're somewhere in the middle, because we are. We are reasonable. We are in the middle, right? But I don't think we should be bashful about the truth, right? The truth is math is not racist. The truth is that civics should be taught. The truth is that while America is not perfect, it is still an incredible country. It's the greatest country on God's green earth for all religions, whether you're a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian. There is no better place to live than the United States of America. But if you say what I just said, you will be labeled, as I've been labeled, as a white nationalist extremist, right? And so that's what they'll do to you. And so we can't be reactive to their attacks. That's my point. We can't say, oh, well, if they're going to attack us for saying the truth, let's soften our speech so they're not as offended, so we are not labeled. We just need to be committed to the truth. And the truth should not be insecure. If they're okay with the truth, I don't think truth is subjective, but if they're okay with what they're teaching, then they should be okay with us teaching what we believe is the truth, because they should be insecure about it. The reason they're so afraid of our 5-minute videos being in a classroom is because they want to dominate the education system as they have. Why are they so insecure? Why are they so afraid that somebody hears our perspective over 5 minutes? Because they know that their truth is subjective, and ours, we believe that ours is simply the truth, capital T. I have no problem with people teaching left-wing ideas. I guess I've just been living with it for my entire life here, right? Because the left-wing ideas are everywhere all the time. It's them who have a problem with teaching conservative ideas. And so I'm saying I'm not insecure. I don't mind them teaching their communist beliefs as long as they allow us to teach why America is a great place. We've had to live with that. And, you know, for parents who want to find a completely politically neutral environment, I'm not sure that it's even doable, because, you know, ideology infiltrates into everything. If you're teaching history or literacy, well, what are the books that the kids are going to read? If they're going to read Scholastic, you know, you're going to have an ideology in there. If you're going to read history, there's going to be an ideology in there. And so my point is that we have to realize that our actions and our demands need to be pragmatic, and they have to be, I guess, founded in reality, right? The reality is that they are teaching a left-wing dominant ideology, and they're teaching a left-wing dominant way of reading American history or understanding, I guess, colonialism. And if we just try to be all politically neutral, then we'll be in the same situation where kids don't hear an alternative perspective. You really want to level the playing field, you have to be unbashful about an alternative perspective. This is not about turning kids into, you know, a rope and tug of war, but you do need to figure out ultimately what the truth is and teach an alternative perspective, or they'll just hear one side.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. The risk that I have, that people can label you or anyone whatever they want, that shouldn't be relevant, right? You have to find what the truth is. I like the way you put that. It's not subjective. Find the truth and teach what that truth is. And again, ideology is everywhere. Try to open any news. You know, I read the Wall Street Journal every morning. It's the only paper, and I read it still in print because I'm old school. But that's the most neutral I'll find. And it's not neutral, right? It still has its own ideology. Each writer, you get to know the writers. If you read it long enough, you already know which slant they're coming from. It's also, it's human nature. But when we're talking about this issue with our kids and education, I think the risk that I have, and I guess I'm seeing it also from a more broad perspective when you're looking at politics, in politics in general today, both parties tend to be oppositional in nature. So whatever one party is doing, they want to do the exact opposite. We're seeing it in the abortion matters now. Every single state that's coming up with referendums, the left, instead of going to somewhere in the middle that they think they'll get it passed at 80-85%, if you look at the polls, they go to 40 weeks, which was extreme because it's oppositional to the heartbeat bill, right? Nobody really tries to find common ground to try to move things forward without giving up. Education is a little different. You were getting to it, I think, at the end, because I think it's important in education to teach both sides, to teach different perspectives. But you have to show them as perspectives, and how they're taught has to be, the lesson plan has to be, here are different ways of thinking. And of course, we're in America. If we don't teach that America is a great country, then what are we doing here? Right? I mean, that's an ideology that I think we all have to agree on. And people who don't agree shouldn't be part of the discussion if they're in this country and trying to raise American children. And just to highlight one problem, my oldest daughter, who gets embarrassed when I talk about her, so I won't call her by name, but she's looking at colleges outside the United States. Okay, she's looking at a university in Israel. And guess what? For American students that want to go to this university in Israel, across the board, they have to take a full summer of math supplement, because American students out of high schools don't have the math level that they need at this Israeli university to compete with Israeli students. So every American student needs to take math. That shouldn't be. This is America, right? And what our focus has been, we've been off the ball. And I think that's really the underlying problem.
I it's interesting you bring up the story of your daughter. So I had the opposite effect. So I went to high school in Israel and came to college back here in the United States. And when I went to UCLA, I met with a professor, and I was supposed to take my math class. And he asked me where I was from, and I said I was from Israel. He's like, okay, I have a special test for you. And he gave me the test. I passed. I didn't even prepare for the test. Took the test right then and there. And within an hour, I basically tested out of the entire math curriculum that I needed to learn at UCLA for a business econ major. So it wasn't that I was, not in need of learning math. But it is, in fact, true that it's a huge disappointment that a country like the United States of America can't properly prepare kids for math and can't compete on the world stage.
Yeah, and if we see where careers are going, where the job market is going, math skills, computer science, engineering, those are the careers of, not even of the future, the careers of today that people need to be in. They don't need to study philosophy like I studied. I won't even let my kids. I said, if you want to study that, study it at home. Buy some books and read them at home, but I'm not paying for that. So, Marissa, I just want to end with, what's our solution? It's a complicated solution. Like we said at some point earlier, you know, this is the education system in the U.S. is really all over the place. It's all fractionalized in school districts and states. What's the solution? What's the best way to do it other than supporting PragerU or in addition to?
Well, I'd start with this. Number one, don't feel despair. I know that there's a lot of very difficult things that we're grappling with right now. It is difficult to see what's happening on college campuses. It is difficult to see, you know, the sexualization of our kids' classrooms. It's difficult to see our kids on social media. You know, these are difficult times. And so I want to start by just acknowledging that. I see that. I'm a parent myself. And I want to be, I want to remind everybody, including myself, that despair is a sin. Right. The whether, you know, you believe in the devil, or if you believe in just, you know, evil, or if you just believe that we have an enemy, the enemy is going to bank on the fact that we are going to be weakened by despair, that we are the problem is going to be so ugly and so scary that we're going to want to stick our head in the sand and do nothing. And so the number one thing to do is, you know, reject despair and do something. And that really leads me to the next thing. I think everybody has different blessings. You know, Gabe, you're obviously a great orator. You have a way with people. People love listening to you. And so you're using the gifts that God has given you to do good. And any person that is listening right now knows what their gifts are. And so take your gift and be part of the solution. It feels amazing. It feels so good to fight against evil. It really does. It gets you out of that pit of despair. It makes you realize that you're not alone. It makes others around you realize that you're not alone. And, you know, when you go to sleep at night and you're frustrated by what you're seeing, you at least get to say, hey, I am part of the solution. I'm not complacent about it. And that has been why PragerU has been so rewarding to me. And you know, I work my tushy off, but I don't care because it's very energizing and I know that I'm doing good. And so my advice is get involved. You know, if you're a parent and you're sending your kids to school, get involved in your kids' education and get on a school board. If you're a grandparent, get involved. Get involved in local politics. Local politics is so important. And if you're not such a political person, there is something you know you can do to be part of the solution, and it will feel so good once you put those blessings to use.
Yeah, and I agree totally. And the last piece, which I think you missed out, but I'm sure you agree on, is focus on your family and on your kids and on your community, because a lot of these people, you know, I've seen people, I won't call them out by name because it's just not my style, but that are very, they're very into and very aggressive and doing a great job pushing all these school issues, these teaching issues, how their kids are being brainwashed in school by the left and all these different issues. And then you take a look at their family lives and their kid, they're not focusing on their own kids and they're not focusing on their own families. There's so much that we can do, right? You could start with yourself and then expand out to your community with your kids to make sure that you as parents are the ones that are educating your children and they're getting supplemental education from school. They're not looking to the school or to some random person that they find on TikTok for morality or for leadership. They're getting that from home and from your family. And I think that's the most important part. People forget about that, the core family, the importance of being part of a community. It's a blessing that I have and you have as being part of a tight Jewish community, that our community is so important to us. But that's true all over. I was on an Uber ride over here to the studio, and I like you know, I have a disease of I speak to absolutely everybody. And my Uber driver was Haitian, and he saw I was wearing a kippah, and he started, of course, most Haitians, when they see a kippah, want to speak about how Israel came and helped Haiti during the earthquake. They were the first ones on the ground. But very quickly, we turned to community. And he was saying how he's going through a tough financial time and he has to focus on his family. And he said something that was exactly something I heard actually in synagogue this weekend. And I told him that, which was, he says, but at the end of the day, all I'm worried about is what my life is like on Sunday. Where on Sunday, I get to sit around with my family and my kids and my grandkids. And that's what's important. I just need to get there. And I heard the same thing in my synagogue about how the Sabbath, that's the dot. That's the point at the end of the week that you have to get to. And that is also the point of the week. So that's really the point of all of this, which is trying to raise our kids and thereby raise a society and grow a society as a whole in our country that will fight back against this and continue to succeed. So Marissa, with that, if you have anything else you want to add before I close, I just want to thank you so much for everything you do. We've known each other for a long time. I'm always in awe. You're a powerhouse that people have no idea how strong PragerU is, the content they put out, the quality, the time that they put into it. And I just thank you. Thanks for everything.
Well, thanks for everything you do. And I completely agree. I mean, enjoy your families. There's nothing more empowering than having people to love and those who love you. So thanks. Thanks for this podcast and thanks for our friendship. I appreciate you.
Of course. Thank you, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. This is a great episode. Marissa Streit from PragerU. Check out her podcast, Real Talk. I think it's at the Daily Wire. Small outfit from Nashville. Never heard of them. Everybody else, please like, follow, subscribe, all the great things you do to support podcasts.